Imagine a world where the most cited intellectual of our time, ranking alongside Plato and Freud, is systematically excluded from mainstream media. This is the paradox of Noam Chomsky, whose analysis has proven remarkably prescient over decades while remaining strangely marginalized in public discourse. When Barack Obama was photographed holding How the World Works in 2008, it sparked both hope and alarm, a fitting reaction to a text that fundamentally challenges our understanding of global power. Through meticulous documentation and clear-eyed analysis, Chomsky exposes the gap between political rhetoric and reality, offering nothing less than an alternative education in how power actually functions in our world. World War II created an unprecedented opportunity for American dominance. While industrial rivals in Europe and Asia lay in ruins, the United States emerged controlling approximately 50% of global wealth with just 6.3% of the population. This dramatic imbalance allowed American planners to reshape the post-war world according to their interests. The strategy was breathtaking in scope. State Department planners developed the concept of a grand area, encompassing the Western Hemisphere, Western Europe, the Far East, former British Empire, and Middle Eastern energy resources to be subordinated to American economic needs. Each region was assigned specific functions. Germany and Japan would become great workshops under American supervision, while the Third World would serve as a source of raw materials and a market for industrial powers. How do you control a population without obvious force? As philosopher David Hume noted, since force is always on the side of the governed, rulers maintain power by controlling opinion. Modern media accomplishes this through structural mechanisms rather than explicit censorship. Major outlets are corporations selling audiences to businesses, naturally filtering content that might disturb privileged readers. The revolving door between journalism, government, and business further homogenizes perspectives. This creates manufactured consent, the appearance of debate within boundaries that don't threaten power structures. Political terms have dual meanings, their dictionary definition and their doctrinal meaning serving power. Democracy publicly suggests meaningful participation, but doctrinally refers to business elites making decisions while the public remains passive. Internal planning documents reveal American strategists' true concerns weren't the Soviet threat, but radical nationalism, countries pursuing independent development, prioritizing their populations over American investors. This explains disproportionate responses to small nations attempting modest reforms, which Kissinger called a potential virus that might infect entire regions. Central America offers the clearest case study of American imperial policy in action. For decades, U.S.-installed dictators ruled through repression with minimal media scrutiny. When Archbishop Oscar Romero pleaded with President Carter to withhold military aid from El Salvador's junta in 1980, he was assassinated weeks later while saying Mass, an event largely ignored by American media. The brutality was extreme. The U.S.-created Atlacaque Battalion committed atrocities, including the December 1981 massacre of over 1,000 civilians. Teenagers were forcibly recruited and indoctrinated with Nazi SS rituals to prepare them for killings with sexual and satanic elements. In Nicaragua, after failing to maintain Somoza's National Guard, the U.S. rebranded them as Contras and launched terrorist and economic warfare. Why? Because Nicaragua showed exceptional commitment to improving the condition of the people, Oxfam, with extraordinarily successful projects, World Bank. These social successes alarmed American planners, who openly aimed to turn Nicaragua into the Albania of Central America, revealing how successful social programs were viewed as threats requiring military response. Wealth inequality has become unavoidable, even in affluent areas. What Chomsky calls internal third-worldization of America, resulting from deliberate policy choices. Nixon's dismantling of the Bretton Woods system amid declining U.S. global dominance triggered a tax on social welfare to protect corporate profits. Deregulation expanded globalization, allowing corporations to export jobs to low-wage regions while shifting power to an international executive through the IMF, World Bank, and trade agreements. In Mexico, border workers earn just $5 daily while enduring toxic pollution. NAFTA accelerated labor flow to Mexico, where a repressive government ensured low wages. Despite Mexico's economic miracle, wages dropped 60% in the decade before NAFTA. Meanwhile, IMF and World Bank policies forced southern nations to adopt market economies, prioritize exports over local food production, and repay loans in hard currency. Bolivia followed this model, improving macroeconomic statistics while increasing poverty and malnutrition and undermining education. America emerged as the dominant military power after the Soviet Union's collapse, despite its weakening economic position. The Gulf War reveals America's true foreign policy beneath the propaganda. When Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1990, the U.S. undermined diplomatic solutions by immediately deploying forces. By mid-August, Iraq offered to withdraw if border issues, specifically Gulf access through two uninhabited mudflats, could be negotiated. The U.S. rejected this outright, blocking the diplomatic track. America resisted diplomacy because nations leverage their strengths in conflicts. Military force is America's advantage. Establishing force as the global arbiter benefits U.S. interests. Diplomacy proves problematic because U.S. third world objectives of domination lack popular support. The war on drugs conveniently replaced the Soviet threat, providing cover for both international intervention and domestic control. When Bush launched his drug war in 1989, public concern about drugs surged from 3% to over 40%. The hypocrisy was evident. While targeting illegal drugs causing approximately 3,500 annual deaths, the administration ignored tobacco, 300,000 deaths, and alcohol, 100,000 deaths. Despite this bleak picture, ordinary people hold significant power. America has become more free through popular struggle, abolishing slavery, extending free speech, granting women suffrage, and winning workers' rights. In recent decades, society has grown more tolerant, with new attitudes about gay rights, environmental protection, and indigenous peoples entering the mainstream. However, progressive attitudes haven't penetrated central power structures. Major institutions tolerate social progress only when it doesn't threaten their dominance. Corporate oligarchies promote a facade of equality where everyone equally lacks control, reduced to passive consumers and workers. Effective resistance requires preparation. Rosa Parks' action followed extensive education, organizing, and struggle. For political change, Chomsky suggests targeting winnable local elections while connecting them to ongoing activism, advocating for labor-based parties to consolidate resources rather than scatter energies. Chomsky roots his critique in classical liberal tradition, citing Jefferson's warnings against financial institutions undermining democracy, and Dewey's vision of democracy creating real people through freedom and participation. These classical liberal ideas are inherently anti-capitalist, flowing into socialist anarchist traditions. Today, these foundational American thinkers sound like crazed Marxist lunatics, showing how intellectual discourse has declined. Our future remains unwritten, shaped by accumulated successes and failures. The question isn't if power can be challenged, but whether we'll build alternatives. In a world where corporations function as totalitarian institutions, with workers having about as much freedom as under Stalinism, our task is speaking truth with the powerless to dismantle illegitimate authority. Chomsky dismisses waiting for perfect strategies before acting. We learn through engagement, developing methods through experience. Real change emerges from dedicated work building understanding, relationships, and alternative institutions. The tools exist if we have the courage to use them.